And we are back with Juno Afternoon. Rhonda McBride here. Thank you so much for joining us today, Gunnar Sheesh. And I have been talking with Benjamin Riley and Glenn Wright, two political scientists researching ranked choice voting. And we've kind of, in case you just joined us, gave everyone sort of an overview of what we want to find out about ranked choice voting, if it will sort of calm the political scene and reduce polarization and probably bring where the majority of voters lie, bring back their voice, and that's the moderate, the middle. So, you know, we haven't had a chance to really go into some of the results at a granular level, but it's interesting that let's start with the U.S. House race, that Peltola almost got about 40% of the vote in this sort of early horse race, which political scientists have said and other political observers that this is kind of more like an opinion poll because we're going to have to wait two more weeks or so to find out how people voted as far as their second and third choices and how that affects the final outcome. But I was in particular looking at the race to fill the remainder of Don Young's term. But Sarah Palin, of course, came in next, and then Nick Begich. So what are your thoughts about how that shook down?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that the opinion polling in advance of the election was reasonably accurate in that the polls I saw all were saying that Mary Peltola would come first, which, you know, is relatively unusual given she's a Democrat and it's a statewide race, and they were right. But 60% of the vote has gone to the Republicans, split, you know, more or less evenly between Begich and Palin. And that's something we need to remember. You know, if we're talking about having the majority view represented, then the majority of voters are clearly Republican. The question, and we don't know the answer to this question, Rhonda, is which way will Nick Begich's number, people who've wanted him first, who their second choice is. And indeed, we're going to have to find out. I think looking at the figures here in front of me, Mary Peltola has 38% of the vote so far. Sarah Palin has about 32%. Nick Begich has about 28, maybe 29%. So, you know, a couple of thousand votes here or there will probably be enough to get either Palin or Peltola over the line. The one thing I would say is that without, you know, Glenn is an expert on Alaskan politics and I'm not, but I know enough about Sarah Palin to know that she is probably a candidate who people feel quite strongly for or against. So she may not pick up as many of these second choice. She's not, you know, she's less likely to be someone's second choice, I think, in many cases, just because she's a relatively polarizing figure. So that may count against her, but I'll leave it to the expert.
No, I think that's right. I mean, and one of the things that I think we've seen throughout this, what has amounted to a very strange race, is that polling for Sarah Palin has shown relatively little change throughout the campaign. That, you know, early on, around 30% of Alaskan expected voters said that they would support Palin, and that's more or less where those numbers came down at the end of the race. I frankly was quite surprised that at the remaining candidates who made it into the general election after the special primary, but it's not surprising that that the remainder of votes are split between these two candidates, a moderate Democrat and a more moderate Republican. And I think to Ben's point, you know, the key question is that is what proportion of the votes that Nick Begich received in the first round of counting as a first preference will be redistributed to Palin as the other Republican candidate, or to Peltola, because perhaps voters are relatively moderate Republicans who supported Nick Begich, or perhaps they just don't like Sarah Palin.
Right. And the other thing that's interesting about Mary Peltola is she doesn't have the name recognition that the other candidates do because she's been married a couple of times. So has been, you know, married Nelson.
That's right.
And she's had so that name Peltola is relatively new, although Mary's reputation as being a solid, hardworking representative remains, and I think that's what people are falling back to, as well as her work in fisheries.
That's right, and not someone that had a really prominent statewide profile before the last couple of months. And obviously, that's true as well for Nick Begich, but he comes from a family that has been long involved in Alaska politics, and so there's a certain benefit to be gained from that as well.
And I think Mary has had a lot of exposure through other candidates. You know, Governor Tony Knowles relied heavily on Mary Peltola when he ran for Senate against Lisa Murkowski. He took her, you know, all the way to Utqiagvik and Nome and other places. And so people got to know her that way. And I think that she probably did the same thing for Mark Begich when he ran for the Senate. So she's had a lot of exposure and is in many ways a dark horse.
And one of the things that we've seen is that, you know, unlike Palin, whose level of support remained more or less constant throughout the campaign, Peltola saw a growing level of support as her statewide campaign began to familiarize voters with her name and with her record.
I think she pulled to the middle, maybe those people that didn't want Nick Begich, who billed himself as more conservative than the most conservative Don Young, and then of course Sarah Palin, who is very hard to the right and supported by former President Trump. So yeah. It's kind of a test of maybe people gravitating towards the middle, but we really don't know because it's not over yet.
Yes, I expect you're right. Yes. Yeah.
Well, it'll be interesting. I'm so fascinated to see where this goes. But then again, you know, there's two separate races going on for the House. So that, you know, the other thing too is let's spend a little bit of time with the Lisa Murkowski bid for reelection. What are your thoughts about how that shook down? You know, I was sort of surprised to see Kelly Shibaka do as well as she did in that lineup. And I think, to me, it sort of points to that conservative base still being very strong.
Yeah, I think that's right. But I also think that, you know, Lisa Murkowski is a very popular senator. She's well known in the state of Alaska. She has a long record of service and a great record of legislative success. And I think that has, you know, led to a really strong showing in the primary. And I think in order to win in the general, Shibaka really needs to knock it out of the park. And, you know, frankly, I'll be quite surprised if Lisa Murkowski isn't ultimately the victor.
And also, Lisa Murkowski, like Liz Cheney, who lost her primary, is one of those who has taken unpopular positions with her party. And, of course, she voted for Trump's impeachment. She's taken some strong stands and tends to tilt towards the middle.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Probably arguably our most moderate senator in the U.S. Senate.
But nationally, people are really watching her.
Yes, yes. And she's in a powerful position, and that's a position that stands to benefit us in the state of Alaska. You know, I think that you can see that she's brought a lot of benefits back to the state of Alaska and the various spending bills that have been passed over the last couple of years. And I think that that's something that we can expect to continue, you know, going forward, regardless of who's in power in Washington, D.C.
So let's take a quick look at the gubernatorial race. This one is really interesting because Les Guerra was kind of the very, very dark horse at the onset of this. And at least from initial results, he did better than Bill Walker. But I think that those numbers have probably shifted. Did that surprise you to see Les Guerra do as well as he did?
I was surprised. It'll be interesting to see you know, going forward into the general election, how those numbers come down. This is another example of the order of ranking being very important in terms of who wins the election. You know, Mike Dunleavy got around 42% of the primary votes, and that's to Walker's what something like 22%. And if you know, if those numbers reflect what we see in the general election in November, it's just going to be the case that whoever wins the general is going to need some other candidate's second choice votes. And so,
is it possible though? Given if you're looking at this breakdown now, do you think it's possible for either Walker or Guerra to come out on top in the end?
I'm not sure that there are enough left-leaning voters for Guerra to be successful, but I've made some inaccurate predictions in the past. I think that Bill Walker could be successful, but I think it's going to be a squeaker. It's going to be a really tight race.
Well, Ben, you mentioned polling in Alaska, and I think one of the problems is, and you listen to some of the national commentators on Alaska, they really don't grasp our geography in our state, that we are such a vast area, and even getting the word out on things like ranked choice voting is hard in the rural areas where you have cultural language barriers and just the fact that people subsist so they're out and about and they're not always tuned into cable TV and they don't have internet access. So I think our state is a very curious state to predict.
And I think that, you know, we were talking with the Division of Elections earlier today, and they've worked really hard to try to get the word out about the way the new election system is working, and how voters can correctly mark their ballots so that their votes are counted. And I think that people are, you know, reasonably well informed about how that system is working and is going to work. But what you said about polling is true. We don't have a lot of polling about voter preferences in Alaska. In some places, you might expect, half a dozen or a dozen polls, you know, in the month or two prior to an election, and we just don't have that amount of information. And yet, the polling that we have so far has been relatively accurate. So we have some sort of an idea about what voter preferences are, but of course, the system and ultimately the election will tell us more.
I'm excited to find out how it all shakes down. I'm sure that you are too. Well, Ben, just in closing, where is all of this research going to go? Because I understand that you have another political scientist in on this research from American University. So,
yes.
So is it part of a bigger picture?
Yes, it's part of a I think there's a series of research projects that have been funded by a group called Unite America, who are one of the external bodies that have taken an interest in the system change and I think are looking to see whether this is a system that could work in other states beyond Alaska as well. So they're supporting some research and researchers. I think the other big issue for Alaska is that this change has essentially a two-year lifespan at present because it was introduced by initiative ballot. It's, secure from legislative
tampering.
Change. Yeah.
Until 2 years.
Yeah, and now that 2 years is going to come around pretty soon, and a number of senior Republicans have already said they intend to repeal some or all of it. So I think this is an important opportunity to let Alaskans, you know, understand what they have here and whether they like it. Find out if they like it and if it's something they want to keep. Because inevitably there will be some who say, look, let's go back to the old system. And I think that'll be a big question. Obviously, it's not a question for outsiders like me. It's a question for Alaskans. But is, you know, do we like this system? Do we want to return to the old system? That will start to become more of an issue, you know, pretty soon, from next year, basically.
Glenn, you want to have the last word here?
I'm not sure what I can usefully add to that. I agree with everything that Ben just said, and I'm excited that we're going through this experience as an experiment, as an effort to try to figure out a better way to do things. And that's something that we've been doing in Alaska for decades. And we think of ourselves as problem solvers and forward thinkers. And this is just another example of that.
You know, that's probably a good place to leave it, but we'll find out. I want to thank you so much, Benjamin Riley, who is with the East-West Center, and Glenn Wright, who is an assistant political science professor at the University of Alaska Southeast. Thanks so much, and for helping us indulge in Alaska's favorite sport, politics.
Thanks a lot, Rhonda. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, too.